Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today, as always, by my stay-at-home husband, Miko Alon.
Hi guys.
Thank you everyone so much for listening. We have a fabulous show in store for you today. We're going to open up the show talking all about the latest developments in the coronavirus crisis. Lots to talk about. And then, after that, we'll be moving on to the new vegan product segment. This week, we'll be tasting new kombucha by Better Booch. This is kombucha in a can. So, that's exciting. And then, we'll be closing out the show with vegan animal rights news. Now, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone, if you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do so on Twitter. I am at Vegan Ari. Miko is at Miko Alon, or use our hashtag Vegan Ari Show. And remember, if you like our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you wouldn't mind helping us spread the word about the podcast, that would also be greatly appreciated by us. We are trying to, you know, tell more people about the show. So anything you could do, whether it's a Facebook post or a retweet, if you like our podcast and you want to help us out, that would be, we'd be so grateful for that. So thank you. Now, Miko, let's get down to it, because the last week has felt like a year, and there is a lot to talk about. The last couple of weeks I've been opening up with the numbers regarding coronavirus, and I want to do that again this week. So last week when we did the show, there were less than 40,000 people infected with coronavirus in the United States. As of right now, there are about 136,000 people, so it is more than doubled in the last week. And also last week, we had a little bit more than 400 deaths from the coronavirus. Now we are at more than 2,400 deaths. These are very troubling numbers. And obviously, we need to remember that behind these numbers are real people that are suffering with this right now. And this week has really highlighted some very troubling things in this country. I was watching Rachel Maddow the other night, who I don't think you can find anybody more brilliant than Rachel Maddow. I really respect her and the work that she does. And she took to Twitter because Donald Trump had actually retweeted an interview that she did with someone from the Army talking about the response to the coronavirus by the Army. And he said, you know, he was saying, oh, thank you, Rachel Maddow. And then she wrote back, she retweeted him and wrote back, you know, hey, since you're watching my show, I have some questions for you. And she talked about how the United States, in her opinion, had the worst national response to this crisis than anybody else in the world. And I think that that is truly highlighted by the fact that now we have more cases of this than anybody else in the world, even more so than China, where the virus first was transmitted from an animal to a human. And there's so much. I mean, let's just talk about some of the things that have gone on. The fact that we were told by Donald Trump that anyone that wanted a test could get a test. The fact that we were told that there would be these parking lots at CVS and at Walgreens where you could drive up and get a test. I think literally you said earlier to me today that there's literally five of them in the entire country.
Right. These four retailers who Donald Trump gave the CEOs blowjobs on live television and during his infamous Rose Garden press conference, they have something like almost 2,700 locations. Literally five in the entire country are providing these tests that were much lauded. And if you look at the actual testing numbers, we're still way behind the rest of the world.
The fact that we were told that Google would have a website for us to log into that would help you locate a testing place and also help you decide whether or not it was right to go based on your symptoms. And then, so none of this has materialized. And then this week, we see this bickering between Trump and the governors over what the federal government is going to do. You had Trump earlier this week saying after Andrew Cuomo The governor of New York said, we think we're going to need between 30 and 40,000 ventilators to deal with the situation. I mean, New York is ground zero for this crisis in this country. They have the overwhelming amount of cases. They have over 50,000 cases in New York right now. You had Trump going on saying, on Hannity, I don't think they need that many ventilators. I think that's overestimated or whatever he said. You have him telling Mike Pence at one of these press conferences that unless the governors appreciate the federal government and laud them for their response, that he shouldn't call the governor of Washington and the governor of Michigan to find out what they would need to help out. I mean, this is this type of bullshit, this disgusting behavior, this is going to cost American lives. If the governor of New York says he needs 30 to 40,000 ventilators, he's the man on the ground. Like, that's who we need to listen to. Trump, what is he basing his rationale of, oh, they don't need, what is he basing that off of?
He's basing it on his hunch. Ari, remember when his hunch said it's not going to be that serious, it will soon go down to zero, or it's 15 people and the number will soon be zero?
And to be such a pathological narcissist, such a sociopath, is to say, well, unless these people, these governors in these states thank us, you don't need to call them, you know, fuck them or whatever. I mean, this is he seriously the worst person in the world that we could have hoped for to be in charge of something like this?
Yes, and I just want to clarify this. When you said that it's Rachel Maddow's opinion that we've had the worst response to the crisis, it's not just her opinion. It's the opinion of every public health official that's been interviewed about it, that the response has been much worse than they feared in their worst case scenario. I just want to ask, what is the difference between Donald Trump telling the president of Ukraine, I'm going to release the aid, but I'm first going to need you to do me a favor, though, the quid pro quo, that infamous phone call, and Donald Trump saying, you know what, if you want help from the federal government, you need to publicly appreciate me. I mean, I have seen even Gavin Newsom in his tweet saying, thank you, President Trump, because obviously he's a governor who knows how you have to act with the sociopathic criminal in the White House.
They've all done that. I mean, I feel like they've done that because they know that they have to do that in order to get a response from him. You have to lick his ass in order for him to pay attention to you. And I feel like I don't know what kind of sociopath requires such ass-licking and fawning in the middle of one of the most tragic health crises to ever face our country. It's obscene.
Well, look at the other report that came out this week, which was that these stimulus checks that are going to be sent out to American families. Did you hear this? That Donald Trump wants his signature on them. It's like he acts as if he's starring in some reality show where everyone suffering and dying is just an extra.
Well, speaking of, he actually tweeted this morning, and again, this is after already 2,000 people are dead. People. Okay? This is what he tweets. President Trump is a ratings hit. Since reviving the daily White House briefing, Mr. Trump, I don't know why he speaks of himself in the third person, but okay. Mr. Trump and his coronavirus updates have attracted an average audience of 8.5 million on cable news, roughly the viewership of the season finale of The Bachelor. Numbers are continuing to rise. He's not sending out a message of my heart goes out to the families of the people who have succumbed to the coronavirus. He's not trying to say we're doing everything that we can to make sure that these deaths are as minimal as possible. He's literally tweeting about his fucking ratings. He is a sick, sick person. This is disgusting. People are dying. I am absolutely appalled by this. And I don't understand how every American can't feel the same. You know, there was a poll that came out this week, a shocking poll, that said that half of Americans think he's doing a good job. You think this is a good job? You think that this is what a president should be doing in the midst of a crisis like this?
Well,
it's absurd.
I think that you see that and I don't know how reliable those polls are, But I think that the polls may seem good for the moment because Donald Trump spews bullshit at his press conferences, these updates, which is why an NPR station has announced that they will not air them anymore because they're so filled with falsehoods. Yes, he gives this happy talk, as we've been talking about, that Rachel Maddow highlighted on her show a couple of weeks back, where it's just a bunch of lies and wishful thinking on what might happen. The reality is that very shortly, we will have twice the numbers of cases that there were in China. The death toll is going to continue to rise. And we have Trump basically trying to pit governors against each other and blame them for what has been the federal government's absolute catastrophic inaction and willful suppressing of any active efforts when there were still time by Trump himself. So I really sincerely hope that Americans are paying attention. It's very frustrating to see, you know, the Republicans are now trying to pivot and say, oh, let's not look at blame. Yes, let's look at blame. Let's not allow this administration to try to rewrite history at every turn. This man keeps saying our response is the best. It's the single best in the entire world. Really? Then why do we have more cases than anywhere in the world? Why do we have twice the numbers of China, which has over 1 billion people?
Well, we don't have twice the number of China yet.
Well, we will in a matter of days.
But yes, I do. I think, you know, that's absolutely right. How can we say our response has been the best when we have more cases than any other country in the world? And he also, you know, speaking of his misleading America, I mean, he went on television this week, did an interview where he said, by Easter, the country is going to be back open up for business. I hope that all of the church pews on Easter will be packed with people. I mean, Easter is like, what, 2-3 weeks away? That is the exact timeline that Cuomo and others have given for when the virus is going to peak in New York, which is the epicenter.
Which is leading the curve. So it's going to come in.
How can he say something so reckless?
I mean, again, let's think about the fact that this man kept saying, this is not serious, I have it under control, the cases will soon be zero. And this week, he and the Republican Party and its imbecilic spokespersons literally now pivoted to, well, a certain percentage of the population is going to have to die.
Well,
you know, grandma and grandpa are going to have to sacrifice their lives for our economy. So what if there's 1 million deaths?
Well,
that is the new Republican talking point.
That was what, okay, so right after we did the show last week, it was either that night or the next day, I was so furious because Trump had tweeted that we can't let the cure be worse than the disease. And what he was referencing was, I believe, something that had appeared in the Wall Street Journal where they were saying, look, at some point we have to open up the economy again and we can't let, you know, deaths stop us from, you know, we can't let deaths completely kill our economy. And then Dan Patrick, who's the lieutenant governor of Texas, went on Tucker Carlson and said, look, you know, I'm over 70 or whatever he said. No one asked me if I would be willing to sacrifice myself for the sake of the economy. And if that's the case, then I'm prepared to do that. And I was literally in shock that we are now putting a price on human life for the sake of our fucking economy. It is so despicable to me. Look, the economy, the Wall Street, the stock market, that can always rebound, okay? The economy can always come back. We've gone through plenty of moments in American history where we've had recessions and a depression and, you know, you cannot bring back human life. Dead is dead. If your mother dies, your grandmother dies, they're gone forever. And it's not just the elderly, not that that would make it any better. It's, you know, a mother in her 40s who's recovering from breast cancer, who has children. It's someone who's 25 years old that has asthma. I mean, what kind of crazy fucking despicable dystopian universe do we live in where we're saying, oh, these lives are just expendable. Fuck it. We need to open up the economy. It is the height of despicable, disgusting human behavior. They've gone like fucking full-blown what's that movie that was this summer where the old people had to kill themselves?
Oh, Midsommar.
They've gone fucking Midsommar. What the hell is going on? Like, I am, that conversation to me is so unacceptable and so horrifying. I don't have words. And you do see people on the rights trying to make this argument that, like, oh, it would be 1%, it would be 2%. That's millions of fucking people. That is an unacceptable thing to say. That's disgusting.
And Fauci said today on CNN that he anticipates between 100 and 200,000 deaths in America. And my question is, how much longer are Trump's supporters going to allow themselves to be gaslighted by this man who keeps changing the blame for this crisis? You know, first it's Obama's fault, then it's China's fault, now it's Democratic governor's fault. You know, something like 13,000 people died in the swine flu epidemic. And I think very tragically that if we make it through this with under 200,000 deaths, I think we'll be very lucky. But this president and his willful inaction and his paralyzing of the federal response and the Republican Party's ceaseless blind allegiance to this man and defending his every horrifying mistake must be called to a reckoning.
Even in the face of Americans dying, you know, when
he hasn't tweeted a single thing about those deaths,
you know, over the summer and into the fall when we were talking about the impeachment, there weren't, I mean, our democracy was at risk, but there weren't lives at risk from the phone call with, you know, the Ukrainian president.
Well, Ukrainian lives.
Well, how so?
Well, because they needed the military aid.
Oh, that's true. I'm talking about, though, from that phone call, it's not like. You know what I'm saying.
No, I understand. Here, people weren't dying. Yes. Now they are.
Yes. People are actually like dying of, it's not a hypothetical, like people are actually dying. And even in the face of that, you see these people defending all of the mistakes that were made, all of the lies that he told leading up to the crisis. And even now, the indefensible behavior of telling governors that they're not going to get the aid that they need, directing the vice president who heads up the coronavirus crisis task force not to call people. I mean, it is so beyond the pale of anything that you would imagine. And so it's, I honestly am so, look, we don't even have a national response to this. You see states like Florida where certain counties are locked down, certain counties aren't. You have the state of Mississippi where the governor said, I'm overriding the mayors and I don't care. We're not doing a stay at home in place. You know, I'm keeping everything open. It is so disorganized and such a mess. And the leadership from the top is so full of mistruths and lies, and that I really think that we are in a total dire situation as a country. It's devastating.
I keep thinking about the last line in the HBO series Chernobyl, which was, "What is the price of lies?" And you think about the fact that the only way to try to get a handle on this pandemic and try to contain it when we still had the chance was widespread testing. We didn't do that, we know now, because Donald Trump did not want numbers to go up because they might hurt his reelection chances. And yet Germany has done an expert job because they're able to track the disease. We're keeping told, Trump says, we have the best response in the world. We have more tests than anyone. Oh, really? Then why is it that we read this week in the Los Angeles Times that LA County is buying 20,000 test kits from South Korea? The fuck are the tests?
I mean,
why does no one in our national media challenge this motherfucker during his daily lie-filled press conferences and say, why have you lied about X, Y, and Z? And when he says, you're a terrible reporter, say, shut the fuck up. You're a terrible president, and you will answer to the American people. We don't work for you. You work for us. I realize that you're Vladimir Putin's treasonous creature, but you work for us. And get the fuck out if you can't.
It's horrifying. And at some point, I know he said, which is totally disgraceful, I know he said, I take no responsibility when he was asked that question very pointedly. I know he said he rates himself a 10 out of a 10 on the response that he's...
Okay, but let's pause that for a second. 10 out of 10. If 10 out of 10 is the fact that we will within days have twice the official numbers of China, how is he going to spin that?
I was going to say, at some point, though, like Harry Truman said, the buck stops with him. He has to take responsibility, and it has to be up to the American people to hold him and his administration accountable. And we can do that in November. This is a crisis that has been exacerbated by the complete failure of leadership from the top. And We're in the midst of it now. I am hoping that we have as, you know, as little human life lost, but it is really, really troubling when you look at what has gone on in just this week. It is so troubling. And speaking of, you brought up Dr. Fauci earlier. I mean, there was an article in the New York Times that it goes so deep with the people who support him that they now are starting to believe that Dr. Fauci is part of some sort of deep state to ruin Donald Trump's presidency. I mean, this is a guy who has been in his role since the Reagan administration. I mean, he's been for decades under Republican presidents, Democratic presidents. He's a doctor. You think Dr. Fauci is really trying to undermine the presidency of Donald Trump? If anything, he's trying to speak to the American people and in a way that goes around Donald Trump's lie so that he can get the truth out.
Can we just for a moment unpack what you just said? Donald Trump supporters, their chief worry seems to be how the truth and how facts and how this evolving tragedy affects his approval and his re-election chances. These people are so deep in this Jonestown cult that they are more worried about Donald Trump's popularity versus their own lives.
It's crazy.
Their safety of their families.
It's
crazy. I think that tells you everything you need to know about what the Republican Party has devolved to.
I mean, literally, somebody said this week, you know, when Donald Trump said, "I could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue," they said, "Well, now he is." You know, his failure of leadership is going to end up costing American lives. And I think it just goes to show you how deep this goes, that even in the face of people becoming sick and people dying, that they think that Dr. Fauci is the one who's spreading misinformation to try and undermine the presidency of Donald Trump. It's just so fucking crazy.
Well, it's like these people have adopted Donald Trump's idea. Like, if you don't like something, just imagine something better and say that that's the truth. They've adopted that same approach.
And Dr. Birx, girl,
she's disgraced herself completely.
I mean, I saw an interview. I mean, it just goes to show, though, that unless you, like I said earlier, unless you lick his ass, I think you're out in terms of, I mean, she was on a show this week and they were doing an interview with her and she's like, "Well, you know, Donald Trump's business background, he's able to take the data and analyze it. And he's so brilliant. I think it's real." And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, even Dr. Birx has to lick this guy's ass in order to stay in some sort of position where she can speak to the American people. It is so despicable. I mean, any other president would have said, "You know what? I'm going to allow the experts to handle this." But of course, he can't do that. And the ego and the narcissism is just unbelievable. He's a very, very, very sick person.
He's also a very, very shitty businessman. If we're going to look at his business record, let's do that. The man has been bankrupt 6 times, went bankrupt running a casino, and everything from Trump vodka to Trump steaks to Trump University, which was shut down for fraud. It's a series of catastrophic failures that he's basically managed to escape from scot-free. I mean, imagine the country we could be if Republican voters were capable of just a little fraction of critical thinking. Just a little fraction.
Well, you know, I talked to someone in my family, who I won't name, who loves Donald Trump. We've been speaking very often during this, you know, stay-at-home time. And I will tell you that to get this person to admit that Donald Trump ever makes mistakes is, it's like impossible. I don't know if it's a pride thing that, like, I voted for this man and now I'm just going to line up behind him no matter what, because admitting that he makes mistakes also means that admitting that I made a mistake and I can't do that. Or if it's just the cult mentality. But dear God, I mean, it's just called critical thinking. You know, I voted for Obama twice. It doesn't mean that everything that Obama did, I thought was perfect. I didn't defend everything that he did. In fact, I protested Obama in 2009 when he was in L.A. because at that point he wasn't supporting marriage equality. I went out and I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's okay to say I made a mistake. It's okay to say that Donald Trump has done something wrong. I don't understand. That mentality is so dangerous And it reminds me of, like, the only thing I can think of is, like, you know, when we watched, for example, like the documentary on Scientology, or, you know, like literally this cult like mentality.
Yeah, so it's the ability to hear the president say that we inherited a completely catastrophic, broken system that couldn't handle anything, and the next breath say, my response has been a perfect 10, the best in the world, we're doing everything we can, and we're the envy of the world. Two completely diametrically opposed scenarios, and yet both of them are true. Doesn't your brain short circuit, or you don't realize that the man cannot be trusted to tell the truth ever? The man has never said he's sorry. He's never said he's made a mistake. He is a pathological narcissist, and anyone who believes a word that's coming out of his mouth is a fucking idiot.
I mean, a lot of what, you know, my family member says to me is, oh, well, they couldn't have seen this coming. They didn't know it was that bad. They didn't, whatever. Really? Then why did those four douchebag senators sell their stocks after that meeting in fucking January? Yeah, they knew it was coming. It was on the front page of newspapers. Other countries were dealing with it before we were. They knew it was coming. Okay, so I don't buy that either. So I am really frightened to see where we go from here. Andrew Cuomo, who I feel like has been a real leader in these times and has been a very straight shooter and just giving facts and not trying to sugarcoat things or mislead the way that the Trump administration loves to do. He's saying that we're still 2 to 3 weeks away from the apex of this. And I know that cities like Los Angeles are telling us that we're like 6 to 10 days behind New York. We were told by our mayor here that we would be under stay-at-home orders for at least 60 days. So that's going to take us to probably mid or end of May. So we'll keep doing the show and we'll keep talking about it. But yeah, this is a really, I mean, honestly, this is a very scary time in America. And sadly, I don't think we could have a worse person at the helm. This is just, it's just unbelievable. So right now I'm really just trying to put my faith in the governors and in the mayors that they're going to do the right thing. But again, the actions that people taking, it really varies on where people are. So heaven help us all. I don't know what else to say. All right, Miko. Well, anything else you want to talk about, or should we taste some kombucha?
I say we try some kombucha.
Let's do it. Yay, new vegan products. Okay, so today we are tasting a new kombucha. I mean, actually, I don't know how new it is. I feel like it's been around for a while, but it's the first kombucha that I've seen start to bottle their stuff in a can. And this is by a company called Better Booch. Now, I don't know if our listeners know this. Miko and I drink kombucha every day. Literally every day with lunch, we split a kombucha. I happen to love the taste, but I've also read and heard over the years about some of the benefits of eating and drinking fermented foods and drinks, that it's good for your immune system, that it's good for your digestion. And so this is just something that we do every day. Now, we usually drink the Health Aid. I feel like that's our go-to. That Health Aid shit is delicious. The pomegranate and the apple, and they make some really good kombucha teas. And then sometimes we do the GT's kombucha, but this is new for us. Now we're tasting two flavors, one called Golden Pear and the other called Morning Glory. Miko, what do you say we start with the Golden Pear? Now I have the description here. It says the Golden Pear is a blend of pear, turmeric, black tea, and something called Tulsi. Hopefully not Tulsi Gabbard, though. Okay, let's taste the Golden Pear. You ready?
Okay, yes.
All right.
Ooh. It's like, I mean, is it wrong to say this tastes like a beer?
This does taste a little bit like beer. Beer is fermented. But you know what I love about this? It's just a little sweet, but not, it's not like overly sweet. It's delicious. I definitely get the pear. It's very refreshing. And yeah, I would almost compare it to like, there is something reminiscent of like a light beer flavor. Do you get any turmeric in this though? I don't get any turmeric.
No, I get, I mean, to me, like the, I get a hint of pear, but it tastes more to me like a light beer.
I think this is really good. And you know, they say that cans are, okay, so I've heard a couple, like, I've heard that cans are actually better for the environment because they weigh less than glass. So to ship them requires less like fossil fuels. I don't know if I'm talking out of my ass or if that's the real, but I think it's cool that they're, you know, putting this in cans now. I think that's, you know, if that's the case. Let's move on, though, and taste the Morning Glory. Now, the Morning Glory, it says, is a blend of peach and black tea. And I got to say, I'm not usually a fan of peach.
I love peach. Let's see.
Usually, all right, here we go.
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
This is where it's at.
Ooh.
This is very good.
Okay, I take it back. I definitely get more of the tea flavor in this, but that peach, it cuts the tea, and it's this is a very complex kombucha. What are you getting?
I love how prominent the peach is. This actually tastes to me a lot more like the kombucha we regularly drink.
Uh-huh.
Like you get, I don't get the sort of the beer flavor you get with the first one. I get a really lovely,
it's almost floral.
Yes, effervescent peach.
But it's almost like a floral taste, what? But not in a bad way.
Is there something else there besides peach?
No, I was looking at the ingredients. It's really, the only things they put in here is the black tea that's been cultured and then some sort of peach thing. And it really works. That's delicious. Wow. I mean, we should put this in our rotation of kombuchas because usually I am like a health aid girl, like almost 100%, but I think that we should work in some better booch.
I also think that if you have not had kombucha or are not sure if you'd like the flavor, this peach one is a great place to start.
It's really good. And I want to also mention, because before we did this, I was reading a little bit about the company on their website. So they're a small company. The person who started the company did so because his sister was diagnosed with cancer and he was reading about Eastern medicine and that kombucha has been used, I guess, as like something to boost people's immune system and whatever. So that's when he started making his kombucha. And you know what? The guy who started GT's kombucha, he did the same thing when his mother was diagnosed with cancer. So this is, and both of those people survived, by the way. Like this guy's sister, it's a success story. She, you know, survived her cancer. GT's mother, I actually met GT's mother at Whole Foods once. That was so crazy. I was at Whole Foods in West Hollywood, and there was an older woman there doing tastings of the kombucha, and you know I can't resist. So I go over, and she goes, oh, she's like, you know, do you like it? I was like, oh my God, I love this stuff. I buy it all the time. She's like, my son started it. I'm like, you're GT's mother? And she was like, yeah. And she looked amazing, amazing. And I was like, girl, I was like that. I'm like, you're like a celebrity. And she was like, yeah, I know. And she's like, and then she looked amazing. And I was like, all right, I got to talk to you. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, because you look fabulous. And she's like, honestly, I'm vegan and I drink kombucha every day. Maybe that's what started me drinking kombucha every day. I don't know. But anyway, if you see this in your market, pick it up. It's called Better Booch. It's in a can. And we tasted today the Golden Pear and the Morning Glory. And they were both fabulous. I give these both an A+. Miko, what do you
say? I agree.
All right. Well, Miko, with that, let's move on to vegan animal rights news.
Let's do it.
Okay, everybody. It is time for vegan animal rights news. First story. Billie Eilish's mom, Maggie Baird, who is an actress, I had no idea. She started a new initiative called Support and Feed. And she's going to be working with 11 vegan restaurants in Los Angeles to provide meals to first responders and people who have been vulnerable to the COVID-19 pandemic.
That's amazing.
This is really cool. You know Billie Eilish is vegan. I didn't know that her mother is vegan too. Now, I want to mention the restaurants because I think that this is great and wonderful. I mean, there's been a lot of companies vegan companies, not vegan, who have stepped up and really done some stuff. I just got an email yesterday from a company called Buck Mason, which is a clothing store that I shop in. They're producing 10,000 masks for people, for hospital workers. I think this is lovely. So the restaurants that are participating are Pura Vida in West Hollywood, which, by the way, when restaurants open up again, if you're ever in LA, girl, you got to go to Pura Vida. That is one of my favorite restaurants in LA.
Mine too. Okay.
Crossroads Kitchen, Real Food Daily, Sage. Sage is also amazing. By Chloe. I have my issues with By Chloe because, you know, well, all right. Something called, PPJLA. That's the peanut butter and jelly place in, what's that place called downtown?
The market. What's it called?
Grand Central Market.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do like gourmet peanut butter and jelly. Donut Friend. Best fucking donuts in the world. Something called Senna Vegan, which I haven't been to. Hinterhof, which is the German restaurant. Crimsey's, which is the Cajun restaurant in North Hollywood. And then Sun Cafe. Thank you to all of those restaurants. And thank you to Billie Eilish's mom, Maggie Baird. You are amazing. Thank you. Okay, next story. Also in people helping out with the coronavirus. Sophie's Kitchen, that does all of the vegan seafood products, they're donating $210,000 worth of vegan tuna to food banks in the Bay Area.
Wow.
Yeah, to help with the coronavirus relief stuff. That is fucking awesome, too. So thank you, Sophie's Kitchen. Okay, next story. This is some good news. So New York City dog and cat shelters are saying that they are nearly empty because of all of the people who are staying at home. A lot of them are now fostering animals. So all these animals that were waiting to be fostered or adopted, they're all getting either adopted or put into foster homes. People want company, you know, while they're at home. And this is what they're doing.
I saw a similar story. I believe Austin, Texas shelters are also almost empty.
I mean, this is, if there's any good news to come out of all of this, I think this is very, very good news. You know, these animals, these poor animals that are in shelters and are in, it's just a, it's a horrible situation. There's just not enough homes, and we are still, you know, educating the public on spay and neuter, and so this is wonderful that all these animals are now in homes, whether they're temporary homes or not. At least they're not in a shelter, you know. So, well done. This is an interesting story. The Prime Minister of Bhutan, which is a country in Southern Asia, is asking all of the citizens there to adopt a stray dog or plant a tree for the country's king's birthday.
Wow.
Right? That is, thank you. Okay. I mean, this is so great. So apparently the country has a lot of street dogs. And yeah, he's encouraging the citizens there to, you know, take one of these dogs or one or more, you know, in and to take care of them. That's such a nice message of compassion, you know, from a country's leader. I mean, how often do we get that? Certainly not in this country. You know, there's a rumor that Donald Trump hates dogs. Have you heard that?
Well, that's because I think dogs are excellent judges of character.
But there's a rumor that he doesn't like dogs. And like, I don't know if... Unless you've had some sort of traumatic experience, I mean, if you just like flat out don't like dogs, that's, yeah.
You know, it reminds me of, you know, those movies where like someone's an evil alien or the Antichrist and like all the animals know.
Yeah, exactly. Like the animals know before the people do.
It's like in the original The Omen, they take Damien to the zoo and all the animals freak out. Probably like any dog that comes near Donald Trump is like, oh, hell no.
Well, we didn't say that dogs don't like Donald Trump. We said Donald Trump doesn't like dogs. So we don't know how dogs react around him, but I can't imagine they get a good vibes from him. So
yeah, they're like, there's something horribly wrong with this decomposing garbage sack that they smear iodine on to try to make it look alive.
But you know, he's like the first president in like modern history who hasn't had a companion animal. Like all the other presidents have either had dogs or cats. And the Trump White House, there's no...
Well, you know... As we know, it is difficult for sociopaths to fake any empathy, and you see how miserably Trump fails at, you know, trying to do it on television. Certainly, he's not going to do it pretending to like a dog.
Well, anyway. All right, next story. Coffee Mate is going to be launching new vegan oat milk creamer at Target.
Nice.
Everyone's getting into that oat milk game. I'm telling you. All right. I mean, you think that we should do this as a new vegan product in a couple weeks?
We should try it.
Do you know if Target's open?
I think they are. I think they're essential.
Target has like a whole food market, so I would assume. But I haven't been to Target since this whole lockdown thing happened. But all right, we will look for this. So thanks, Coffee Mate. Look forward to tasting your oat milk creamer. And finally, my last story of the week. Carol Baskin, who is the owner of an animal rescue called the Big Cat Sanctuary, she is expressing her disappointment over the way that animal cruelty has been depicted in this new show, Tiger King. Everyone's talking about the Tiger King. I haven't watched it yet. I told Miko we have to watch it this week because if one more person texts me about it, or if I say I have to, I know. But she's saying that it really doesn't, that she, in her opinion, this, I think it's a documentary series, this Tiger King, that it doesn't really show the reality of how cruel these big cats, how much cruelty they actually endure when they're kept in captivity like this as like private, you know, pets or whatever. And so, like I said, we haven't seen this yet, so I don't really know what they show or don't show, but I know that people seem to be freaking out about this documentary. I will say this, you know, I don't think many people understand that there are actually more, I believe it's tigers, in captivity in the United States than there are in the wild.
That's correct.
And that many states barely have any laws governing whether you can have exotic animals, like for example, big cats. And these poor animals, I mean, there's nobody checking up on them to, you know, see what the welfare is like in these private homes. And then, of course, you also just have to question the total lack of ethics in taking a wild animal like this and keeping them in captivity in your backyard, or even worse, in a cage. It's disgusting.
I don't think when you think of, say, tigers as pets, we're talking about as people who thought it would be cute to have a tiger cub. Then the tiger is a 400-pound beast that you keep in a cage because you can't have a tiger roaming around your house. They'll kill you.
It's horrifying.
It's so cruel to these animals.
It is horrifying. And I know that from going to a lot of wild animal sanctuaries, that a lot of the animals at these places come from private owners who had their own tiger or their own lion. And, oh, guess what? Now that this animal is full grown, I can't take care of them anymore because they're a fucking, you know, like you said, a big carnivorous animal. A lot of them are malnourished. I mean, obviously, they don't get nearly as much exercise as they should. They're not with anyone. I mean, I think tigers are solitary, but lions, live in prides. They're, you know, living alone. It's just so sad. And I really can't understand why there wouldn't be some sort of federal mandate that says that you cannot own wild animals. All right, you want to get live with a dog or a cat, an animal that's been domesticated over thousands of years, of course. But owning wild animals should be outright banned. There's just no ethical way to do that. And it's just wrong. It's patently wrong. But we are going to watch this show this week because everyone's freaking out. I want to see what everyone's talking about. All right. Well, Miko, with that, we've come to the end of another show.
Yes, we have.
I want to thank everyone so much for listening. We love doing the show and we love you guys. We hope that you all are safe and feeling well. If you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do so on Twitter. I am at Vegan Ari. Miko is at Miko Alon. We're posting a lot about the coronavirus stuff, so you'll see a lot of that stuff there too. You can also use our hashtag Vegan Ari Show. We'll be checking that to see if you guys reach out. And if we don't, I almost forgot to say, if you like our show, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if we don't hear from you, we will speak to you next weekend. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Stay safe out there. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.